think the broad definition of that highway, whether it be a god or not, but I'm trying to allow specifically the guy that wants going will be stopped in a path to be able to do it when he can't get the truck off the highway.
But how do you do that without knowing everyone else in every other business? I know one of the big things I know is one of the signs in the military is one of the stories that flags, the lack of flags.
What about loading a truck?
I know exactly what the plan is doing, but you're going to take them and turn them, and that's the problem.
That's what I'm suggesting. You know, the thing we've got to remember is there are a lot of just plain practical problems. You know? The lodger wants to load his cat down here, and you know, if you get out in the country, there are a lot of places where you bring that cat right down off the road, and there's no place to get on, so it's not practical to get on. So I'm saying if you require him to go up the street and stand there and wave the people down. You know, these aren't big instances, but they're the kind of instances that Representative Schultz and I get every day when some enterprising individual gets this. So I can't see why it's there, and can't fit in.
Well, I was suggesting that when we put the language in, well, the likelihood of that was that the private citizens and aggregate the provisions of wide statement of the state law, so that's a rule, and it's a license that might be dangerous, and maybe a disadvantage. But I raise this point from my personal experience.
I'm quite serious about this. It's a practical problem in semi-rural areas.
When's the last time somebody got arrested in your area?
Oh, I'm not sure, but it hadn't been too long ago.
Somebody had a head on.
Comes along and it's some enterprising officer. I mean, I think you really got some, you know, very legitimate problems here to solve. And I don't think you solve the practical problems of living by prohibiting those. Outside of business or residence.
Well, I have a hard time seeing how you justify it from one thing that I've been trying to do after that.
We'll do that again.
If we were going to advance it there, and I think at least it can be seen as the kind of flag or the kind of stop sign or the kind of signal that people have to have for everything from more than knowing from the telephone that what they're supposed to do. Because I've seen people really buy an unofficial flag in another stop, and it's a very expensive thing.
A really good friend of mine is a flag when he got killed. I thought that I didn't know what to do with it. Anytime you start charging like that, you're going to buy more trouble than it's worth.
You gotta have that kind of discussion. The whole problem is where you got a craftable building on.
Chairman, I think Dr. Albert Gray said there are instances of statements here. Basically, I've been trying to get some of that.
I'll tell you, much better example in my cattle truck is the low boy that's going to load a calf. Much better
example. Now, they have set from the first sub-second one for that limited traffic about partially the people standing off the roadway. Certainly,
you know,
there's no truck
weight
down or
both
of
them.
Both of them.
I don't understand the 2 seconds.
Well, I think probably the FCC is taking care of already.
I mean, you know, you're touching on the first thing.
You've got to read the key.
I got some fairly different ones. I think the Senate votes was 43.294.
Roadway means that portion of the highway that previous on the road and gives you that it's stolen. If that's the highway and there's two or more separate roadways, then roadway, okay, then let's see, highway. The real question is the question between highway and roadway. It's all right to park on a roadway, but it's not all right to park on a highway. Define the difference between a roadway and a highway.
Well, a roadway is a good story.
That'll be the only difference. Roadway is travel point. See, this then, the next section, even if they're stopping on the shoulder of the road, not on the track. On lines 27 through 32 on page 45.
Where's that now? Section 96.
Okay. Section 95, page 45. It says you can
that's on the roadway, not the shoulder.
The roadway is a travel port, right? It says it's an offense to stop, park, or leave standing a vehicle on the traveled portion when it's tracked full to get off. The next section says that a person shall not park or leave standing a vehicle, whether intended or unintended, on a highway, unless, so that this highway includes shoulder. Okay. Decided that the guy can't even stop his truck on the shoulder and load that.
In other words, you can't block the road. this is good. That's the reason you can't block the road.
I'm saying that's fine. I
okay. So anyway, when you say B, gotta have B too. You gotta be able to see the same for B, correct?
That's correct. Or I'm suggesting C, or you provide flagging if adequately to give notice of the danger.
What?
Is there anyone that objects to moving House Bill 1011 to the floor with a blue pass recommendation?
No, everyone.
No, but that's the time effective until July.
Is there any objection to that motion? Not appearing, it's voted by unanimous consent. Safer than the 200 feet, frankly.
It could be. I can see all kinds of different things in this area. But what you're doing is you're authorizing a private citizen to block the road completely.
No. No. No.
How does it work?
The amendment says that a person shall not, I'll read the language after the amendment of conduct. Person shall not park or leave standing a vehicle where he attended or unattended on a highway, unless he has to do one. Clear and honest stretch of width of the highway opposite the standing vehicles left to pass with the other vehicles. I presume that means one lane is left to pass with the other vehicles. Is that my situation correct? Okay. And this is the problem. And the standing vehicle is visible from a distance of 200 feet in each direction from the highway. I'm suggesting alternatively to that. In other words, you're visibly 200 feet, or you provide adequate notice to a flag man. But you can, under the present law, Dave, you can leave it there 3 days, as long as it's visible 200 feet. So under the present law, you can leave the same parts on half of the highway, visible for 200 feet. That takes care of all my amendments. Okay, Representative Mark said an amendment which we delayed so you would have
adopted the definition of careless and reckless driving rather than being driving 1 and 2, same language, everything, same time.
left foot drive into the main area, right foot drive in one.
Dealing with Representative Justice's amendment on subsection B, after the word notice, and what we're saying here is specify that a citation for violation of this section will not be issued as proof that the vehicle complies with standards for the controlled noise emissions adopted pursuant to RS 467.030 is presented within 60 days to police agency issuing the notice. And then we would add, proof for the purpose of this section shall be a certificate issued by the DEQ, comma, affidavit certified by a business providing automotive repair, or a test administered by the police agency issuing the notice, except that such agency must provide a test upon demand. Because we don't talk about what the proof is. And I think there's a question there in terms of what is the police agency going to accept. Would be proof for the purpose of this section shall be a certificate issued by the DEQ.
Yes, sir.
An affidavit certified by a business providing automotive repair or a test administered by the police agency issuing the notice, except that such agency must provide a test upon demand. Now, as you're aware, within the DEQ budget, there is funding for the buying sound meters. And Captain Williams sent over a letter that
is Representative Justice and agree with the amendment.
I just wrote them up, Representative. I would think that he would, because there's certainly no additional burden.
Representative Bunn made the adoption subject to Representative Justice's amendment. Is there any question or any objection to the amendment?
Representative Magruder, would you consider one other amendment?
What does that relate to?
It relates to a tire standard.
No. I'm willing.
As you know, Council
has some technical amendments to deal with. Is there any objection to them? If not, they're ordered by unanimous consent.
Would you stay to inspect the tire amendment?
Representative, is there anyone?
I don't know.
Representative Gilmore, I have a question before we enter the amendment. You ask council and or Mr. Swett, can you please wait?
Right now, on the first situation where mugs are prohibited, you know, like running a cat down the highway, which is free. But I could definitely find out in the whole place of highway, I need to clear the shoulders. And in fact, the question is, does that prohibit the cat from running along the side of the road? That's something on the farm, and trying to throw a cat, you know, from one acre to the other, maybe it's still going.
The problem is you're getting the problem is I put down is you're getting the highway and roadway.
So I have a concern around this thing that is using the definition of highway that's before. I mean, this prohibited legs on the travel portion, and you say you want to go to prohibited on the highway, you set the decision to be sold off, and
that's why I'm concerned.
We haven't put anything in here that's going to preclude pulling a steel wheel to the farm machinery on the highway. Oh, our problem is we're worried about roadway and highway, the definition. Okay, now, what about, is it under present law, is it illegal to walk a cat down the highway to put boards underneath it so the cat doesn't touch the roadway? Don's trying to look up your question. Ralph and Bud are trying to look up my question. My concern would be walking a cat across the highway or walking a cat for a short distance down the highway. Okay, are there any other amendments? We've got these two questions.
Not acting appropriately, you think you have an opportunity to do any trial. And
Okay. Now, Doug, would you go over the amendments that we held? The first one that we discussed is suggested on page 55, line 34. After the word conviction, we insert the language within a 5-year period to clearly state that it's only the second or subsequent conviction within a 5-year period that results in a given employee. Page 154. Call for the question. Requiring me to pay extra money to buy a car with seatbelts when my seat's not. So I can't imagine how anybody can object to taking that section out of Oregon law.
I don't know whether there is a sort of a general diversity there. I don't think that's good. I think Thank you.
what we're faced with here is simply an issue of principle, and quite frankly, it's that principle that gets me out of my own warm bed down here at 6:30 in the morning. The bill poses a rhetorical question of, I don't know what the number is, I assume that we're talking about the rate bill.
And all the rate bills have been signed by the governor.
Well, the related bill. But this bill poses a rhetorical question of, if you consent once, does that mean that you consent forever after? And you can analogize it to the situation where if my husband hits me in the shop, does that mean that I can consent to it, that I consent to the next assault? Most pointedly, to shooting rape as a crime of violence and not a crime of sex. Yesterday, the questions were raised by two members of the committee that relate to the sanctity of marriage. And I would suggest to you that if the committee really is concerned with the sanctity of marriage, and I know that I am, and try to conduct my legislative affairs toward preserving a family and a sanctity of marriage, that why should you give status, if you're really concerned about sanctity of marriage, why should you preserve or give some status to cohabitation without benefit of safety? And that's essentially what that provision does. Now, Representative Bunn suggested in his argument, and he suggested this to me privately, that he's fearful that this would promote less than harmonious relationships between people and be dragging family fights into court. And I could only say to that that presently, in order for this issue to be raised, it has to already be in court. And you have a situation where two people are living in a commune or some sort of relationship where they're not married and they're not even, they're not sleeping together. Assume that there is a brutal rape under those circumstances, and the woman charges the male with rape, then immediately he's given a prima facie defense of cohabitation, because all you have to do is go into bed and say, well, we're all living together in this house, and you raise the interest that by the mere fact of living in the same house that they are cohabitating. So the burden once again is put on the woman. If it seems to me that where the situation where the defense would arise, but it's still a jury question about the cohabitation. And if you remove this defense, you're still leaving it to the jury to decide in their own minds whether or not she had consented. If this isn't any valid reason to have this defense on the books, it's still a jury question. It's simply a matter of principle, treating rape as a crime of violence. And I'd just like to reiterate that intellectually, as far as legal theory is concerned, if you simply cannot assume that consent once is consent thereafter, and that's about all I have to say about it.
It's been good represented, Paul.
Yeah. If somebody raises this defense, couldn't they charge them with battery anyway? The fact that you were attacked. That way it makes it, not a non-sexual act. Okay. There's two parts to rape, actually. One kind of assault, the other sexual act. Now, this.
Since
the woman charged him with battery.
If the real crime was rape, why should you ask the woman to go around the legal corner? Just, if the crime is rape, why are you asking her to bring the charge on some other criminal definition? What is the danger? That's what I'd like to present the committee. What is the danger that's presented to society or relationships between men and women by removing this as a defense? There is none. If you and I were living
without benefit of clergy, either sleeping together or not sleeping together, but still living in the same house. And I charge you with rape. The specter that's been raised on the floor by the gentleman is that this would give me an opportunity, a better legal standing to harass you and claim rape, cry wolf, when in fact it has not happened. And it's still a jury question. The jury's going to look at you and me and decide which one of us they want to believe and view the circumstances of our living. But the danger in leaving it on the statute is this. If you do commit a brutal rape, an act of violence against me or someone else that's sharing the same house, and we have not been cohabitating together, and it is a legitimate complaint on my part, then all you have to do is come in and raise this defense, and I'm left out there hanging. It's simply not equal justice. It doesn't give us an equal footing for the court system. I see things guilty from
cohabitating. There isn't much psychological damage incurred by the rape.
I think that's true.
It may not always be true.
The psychological reports indicate that the psychological damage done to a woman is greater if she's raped by someone that she knows than by a stranger.
There's no question. Monetary center of no cause. Anyone else working to help
I want to point out that the statement that I made yesterday to House floor is corroborated by the commentary to the criminal code, which points out that adding a cohabitation changes the common law. And says section 107, which this is, changes the common law to the extent that it allows the spouse relationship to protect parties who are not in fact legally married. And my point is that if we're concerned about protecting the common law, common law didn't have very much concern about the relationship of cohabitation, and I don't see why we should
But this is not the same bill, Mr. Chairman, that was on the floor of the House yesterday.
No, we talked the question that we asked today about those amendments.
I don't know. I'd like to have time to think about
that.
The one that we're concerned about does not speak to married people. And if you really want to preserve the sanctity of marriage, then why do you want to dignify living together by leaving this defense on a book?
I'd just like to point out a suggestion to you, a couple of things that might ease the concern over this bill. First, however, I would like to respond to the suggestion that somehow a woman is less injured if she is raped by someone with whom she has been living. I think there's common sense as well as statistical evidence would suggest that you are liable to be more injured when someone is injured with some such violates your privacy in a sense of personal way. Involved in rape than if it happens in a particular game. But in the real practical world, I would be willing to bet that in the state of Oregon, which is 2,200,000 people, the passage of this bill would not produce 10 final arguments before a jury in the next 10 years. In those cases where there's, in those 8 or 9, I would submit that those cases really ought to be able to be finally argued. But if you actually had a case which was sufficiently egregious that a district attorney was willing to take it to a grand jury and a grand jury were willing to indict, that it did not have a roadblock in front of it of this really rather serious defense. Because as a practical matter, DA learns very early that getting a woman to complain against the man with whom she is living and to stick with the complaint is almost impossible. And I after I'd been a DA for a year, I established a rule in my office that any woman who was living with a man who came in and had been beat up in any fashion and wanted to file a complaint, I required her to wait 5 days, which 5 days had to include a weekend, before she could sign the complaint. And the reason I did that is that for the first year, I had just automatically let the complaint be signed, and without one single exception, that woman had been back within 5 days saying, I won't do it, gotta be just a complaint. So we always went through the exercise, we filed a complaint, and 3 or 4 days later we dismissed it. After the first year, I departed from that one. A woman came in, and she had nearly lost an eye. She was just the worst looking mess she ever saw. And I thought, I'm not gonna make this poor woman come clear up back up from Hamilton again to do this. She obviously is going to stick with it. Nobody can see that this guy. They didn't see my mind, so I filed it. 6 days later, she was in crying and weeping and screaming and hollering. I was going to have to dismiss that complaint. And we had to dismiss the complaint in case she got signed. We stuck with it. So I stuck to my rule with great firmness. About 16 months later, I departed from my conviction once again that she'd always have that waiting period to make sure that the person intended to follow through, because a woman who was living with a man, had been living as husband and wife for 7 years, although never formally married, had been mishandled by her, the extent he accusing her wrongfully, apparently, of infidelity, had, after beating her up, inserted his hand into her vagina and pulled out a piece of her uterus. And I figured, this one, I didn't have to worry about it changing her mind. And I also figured there didn't have to be concerned because this was aggravated assault, and therefore we could treat it as a felony, not a misdemeanor. And we didn't need her as a complaining witness, all we needed her was a testifying witness. Even if she did get a little squeamish, we'd still be able to prosecute the case. That case was finally dismissed because she was promising that she was going to prison herself and swear that it had never happened, despite the hospital records and all the rest and the bloody panties and all the other evidence. He was going to swear that it never happened, and there's no question we could not have obtained a conviction. So in the practical world, I'm not concerned about anybody being unduly harassed. And I should admit to the committee that if there is a case where a woman has been raped and she is willing to stick to it, there's going to be minuscule in number, but that case ought to go to trial. They ought to go to the jury. You should remember that the prosecution is still going to have to prove that rape occurred only because that woman was in actual reasonable fear of death or serious physical injury. A serious physical injury is described in the statute. It's a very heavy burden to establish. It's a particularly heavy burden to convince the jury that could be the case since she had been living with it. And if it goes that strong, I think Josh didn't hear it right now. And there will be that. Any questions? Not. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith, next witness. Anyone else interested in this bill?
Senate Bill 436 takes no legal rights away from the accused actor. That's on the grounds on the modern one, all of this. It takes no legal rights away from anyone. It does give legal rights to the victim. I would like to ask the committee, and since when are we rationing out equal protection? By defeating Senate Bill 436, this legislature is approving of rape under some circumstances and not in others. Rape is an ugly, violent, demeaning crime. We are talking about a crime that is committed against half of our population, and certainly now 50% should receive legal protection when a crime is committed against them, regardless of its nature. The role of the DA's office and the police is to investigate thoroughly all the rape cases. The role of the court system is to determine the guilt. By simple cohabitation, no one should be excluded from protection of the law. It's not a valid defense.
Okay, question. Not sanctioned, next witness. Any additional witness?
I'm Ann Kelly. This is my daughter, 13. I'm the lobbyist for all the women bills in this legislature, and I have not had occasion to speak about the rape issue before this meeting because we had so many lawyers and all coming to speak. But at this point, I just couldn't hold back from adding a few words of amazing at what happened yesterday, and hope that you'll reconsider this bill and send it back to the floor for vote. I just think there are a couple of things that's going on to envision when considering the cohabitation situation. One is the kind of case where cohabitation can be a very vague relationship between a man and a woman. A man perhaps has moved into a woman's apartment in a moment of enthusiasm or whatever, and perhaps the relationship wanes very fast, but the threat of rape can remain, and the threat against her can remain there, and he can quietly insinuate that he will rape her if she's begging him to throw him out of the apartment. There's no legal way of divorcing him or getting rid of him or of separating or stopping the situation. And he can, by sheer force of personality, stay there for months and take advantage of her. There's very little he can do to stop the kind of situation. But the other kinds of situations that I think are growing, and they have been mentioned, is the fact that students living together and college towns, and this is more and more frequent that a group of five or six young people will get gathered together and share the expense of a house. Whether this is moral or not is certainly to be debated, but nevertheless they're considered by the law to be cohabitating with man and wife because there's very little other exception the law can legally make as to what their intent in living together. And if you know where college situations are like, usually the last 2 months or so of a college year, maybe somebody moves out and a young man is offered to move in, and the group says okay, nobody really knows him, just to help pick up the rent the last month or so. This man is hardly known by the others in the house, and he can rape and continue to. And I understand what's happened. I'm sorry that we did not work hard enough to get actual cases here to all to speak to you of married women and the cohabitating women in the situation, the kind of set kind of feeling that they would feel about rape. And I think that perhaps it is necessary to have sex and marriage. That's what the physical kind of cases they might be even being excited initially. But I think you could certainly find them if you were to have sex.
Mr. Chairman, I'm one of those people about who moves this topic. I live in a co-op, 7 people. It's certainly not a part of my lease, concerns any form of sexuality. But by the definition of the law, we have to prove that in a court if I got raped. It's not exactly the election. I think these kinds of situations, because of the cost of housing, are on the increase, not just in college towns and not just among college people. And I really think the committee ought to seriously think about whether they wish to put that kind of sanction on an alternative housing arrangement where the burden of proof would have the only woman is inevitable. It's my hope that the committee will send this bill back out on the floor and that those arguments can be undermined.
I'll focus on the issue of the legislation between the 7 people and the 5 women, you know, the man and the woman who move in together for purposes of a marriage relationship that I made specifically.
see a distinction yet. But in my mind, if they mingle together for purposes of living together in a marriage-like situation, to me, there's a very large difference between marriage and living together. Usually, you are probationary, and I think that automatic consent to sexuality does not always apply. And what's more, although the consent might be there for lovemaking, I don't think it's automatically there for rape. I think assault is a very different sort of thing if you just happen to use, and I don't mean to be quick about this, if you happen to use that particular blunt weapon, it does not change the fact that it's assault. And I think where the argument comes in that even within a marriage life situation, it is not assault.
Okay, any additional questions or statements?
John, I've given you that. I guess the thing is, because it's obvious after reading that, the reason it was put in was that they wanted to support the same protection to a man and wife woman living together as it is a man and woman who are legally married.
Yeah. Here's the problem I'm having.
it's obvious after reading the note to that. There's a rigid protection. It's the idea that they wanted to take the same rationale to a legally consummated marriage and extend it to two people who were cohabiting together, since we don't have it, but it's common law, because the same family unit exists.
No, I suggest that the common people don't talk to
So that's the rationale you say, is the fact that a man and woman cohabiting together, not legally married, is not the same relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually not the same. There is a difference between cohabiting and married.
The whole thing that's not pointed out, the fact that there have been two prosecutions or anything else is already out, it's a question of correct. If representing two and God, she's cohabiting with someone, and that party happens to get mad at him and goes to the district attorney and say, be raping, the district attorney is now going to say, forget it. If he would feel this law, the district attorney is going to say, well, we can maybe talk with you.
Come into the next room and I'll give you a paragraph check to talk with you again, let us in front of you in the next
room. Once an unmarried man, living, another is with a woman, to be more protected from harassment, quote unquote, than just any John Doe who raped a woman. If he's not married to her,
they're living very differently.
And the function is that very act of living together with a telling is a reason, it's a fornication, in a better time.
I'm satisfied because I see the particular point that you're making for the first time.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of people that are successful in this girl opened the door to this guy to continue marriage.
We won't recall the bill, but I won't send it to the judge until I receive the tools and the environment and from my district. Remember Robert's bill, and I'm very interested in the bill.
Which one did it?
Representative Bunn was against the bill, and I was passed it out, said it was true. Representative Bunn then brought to Mr. Sim of Children's Services Division, and there was an agreement with Mr. Sim that come before the committee and put the legislative intent of the bill. We then after that came back and so we're holding the bill subject to all the measures and that there's no change to that.
Figures don't mean anything to me. I don't care if it's 0.08 or 0.12. The significant factor of it, that whole section, is the disputable versus the conclusive presumption. That's the heart of it, as far as I'm concerned. Because I want the opportunity to be able to come in there, personally, as an attorney, if the guy blew a 0.08, to be able to show that even though that's what the blood alcohol content was, that he's driving and everything else, if he wasn't on, there was no reason charging with it.
You can't do that over 0.05 now, though.
I know, yes, and that's the significance of when it was a 0.08, if it was conclusive.
Yeah, I'm talking about 0.08. I'm not the 0.10 now, I think it's solved by the 0.2.
Senate Bill 699.
It's fantastic. Approved by the committee if you want to leave.
No. Keep it going.
Oh, we just started to spread the people over here. I think we need to look at this bill. There has been a request. Oh, I'll get 64. that bell here.
And Bill 25? Oh, I think it is.
It seems the bird, the bird.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Senate Bill 134. Encourages person likely to become unconscious or inexperienced to wear identification cards or devices.
How about, do you send out 54?
No,
it's after email. You didn't?
So next, fingerprinting and photographing of certain children designated suspects for certain child.
Now, we were going to move in
a bunch of amendments, and there was objection to that.
What about 135?
You may, for tax reasons, not want to get property given to you.
Oh,
and then under the common law, once it was vested and you taken delivery, that was it, and you died. That's
had
it. This gives you a period of time and you can come to by which you can explain.
No. What would be a reason to take it?
Tax-wise,
so you want
to wait. You know, suppose you keep the property, you've got monthly installments of it for $450 a month, and you're in your own office. You know, all kinds of issues, but I'm not sure what obligations you want.
That's my bad.
Okay, Senate Bill
137.
Sam's right, yeah. Any objection to 137 is not in my 145.
Now, we put a bill of this nature out, didn't we, now?
145.
I'm going to put 142 out.
Terminates designated from the divorce seeking spouse's benefit.
Hey, how come you asking for 142 out? What did you do with 186 there?
Yeah, then we'll have to county enforcement counselors to insist that civil penalty measures are laid on all the state banks. That's done.
Correct?
That's
right.
Oh, we don't have a
hearing on. We know that.
We don't have a hearing on one of these things going on. That's the point. One of these things. I do not see how we can start awarding reasonable penalties to people unless we do it on a uniform basis, and the Canada Committee that still my bill to allow us to do that on a uniform basis.
Well, I think there's a difference between the electability and the legal arguments for that policy consideration against making an amendment and calling it out to the consideration.
Any other action is being entitled to receive a reasonable fee for expert witnesses? I don't think there's any other action I know of.
Jim, if I could ask you to take a look at 461 at the moment, we're not creating a new kind of action in which penalties are awarded. We're now recoverable for just increasing the amount of the
Yeah, but it is more important to people. If it's a fee awarded to a person,
that's it.
It means that only that has to call expert witnesses. It's not a liability case.
You are expanding the dollar fee of the penalties within which the fee will be awarded, but you are also permitting compensation of expert witnesses, which is very important. It's a significant, tremendous outlay.
So we got one. You won, didn't you?
He's got no strong suit going away. I know. He just went for it, but that is.
It's designed as weapon oversight. I have no problem with that. It's just a
Okay, 714.
What about 703?
Yeah, that's the one that was in the memo to.
Yeah.
If 714 can say something about it,
714 is not the record here. You want to hear it? I'll put it on the number.
Does that change the existing law? Yeah, you know what it is. It's that it's under the existing law, once an attorney appears, I mean, once the person gets an attorney, you can serve everything on his attorney or record.
Oh, it didn't require service on the individual defendant.
On all the motions and everything. Well, the problem that I have with that is the fact that your client, like, they're not always diligent.
Yeah,
he gets the motion and you don't even know about it.
Well, no, I don't. No, sure, they need, if you've got the court notice, you can say anything.
Well,
they have to set that down for you.
There's no requirement that you serve the attorney. That's the problem.
I think there's an intent to serve it on the defendant and serve it on the attorney. But we better
let him know. I don't think that's what he wants.
I think that I've always been ethically, it's improper for you to send something to a client directly, because you must be by a lawyer. You're going to make a statement. Okay, let's find out. From
if you look at what the bill originally was and what it was intended to.
$800 will have to wait on.
Are these bills that have you?
How about 770?
Yes, that's the amount of money. It's not on.
Okay, 804. Authorizes certain license with certified mental health related license in Oregon attendance is first. Or is the person not showing him the meter there and file for district? Any person 18 years of age or older in attendance is first to prepare birth certificate. Permits attention to file an act of certain birth with local registrar upon the question mother.
Did you show him again?
Yes. Is there opposition?
529 the letter.
Not that I recall, but it's easy to get to the Mary Robbins office. Why is it going to be a
student? Yeah. By the way, make it easier to prepare a valid birth certificate.
Let me ask you. question about being able to use the document. If you have a contested case under the Administrative Procedures Act, there's no provision in the ACA for who has the burden of proof in a contested case. So it's a little unclear to me what the contested case would be all about and who would have the burden going forward. Does the parole board have the burden of showing that he's not rehabilitatable, or would the prison have the burden of showing that he is rehabilitatable? So do you think the prison would have a right to counsel in this situation? Standard of proof in a contested case is reliable probative and substantial evidence, not even defining of that. So it makes a difference who has the burden of the place of the enforcement. The way the bill is designed, it wouldn't make any sense for anyone other than the prison to have a burden for a Did you hear what that is? It basically gives the ticket away from the court to the control board, the limit of the AJ's corpus, and the limit of the contested case under the ACA. It doesn't seem that at all. It does. This is a contested case to determine whether or not there's a change of status as far as rehabilitation is concerned. It doesn't say anything about whether or not the person is doing parole. It would only be determining eligibility for parole or something like that. So the burden isn't defined in the ACA, which is why you have to do it. The ACA is such that it really leaves as though. I think it really leaves as though the agency is moving twice.
problems with the ACA performing of this bill is my name is ACA.
No, you don't need to amend the ACA. All you need to do is make specific alterations to ACA's procedures for this particular form. I don't want to keep mentioning the ACA with all the acceptable things to modify them. The kind of investment case that it is that I've seen been a problem for that. The problem is that under the ACA, it's the agency that serves notice, it's the agency that gives written charges, and that's not really appropriate to use this time where I would see these petitions.
You know, most of the murders that take place are by murderers who will never be again. South kind of killing him. I'd like to see those names because as of now, in all cases, he's trying to be in business for life. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. They want to get it to Carl Bowles, which that's one thing. They want to indiscriminately end up for life all kinds of people who are never going to commit a violent crime again. That's one thing. Doesn't make any sense. Thank you.
that's a mark.
That's just a simple way to do that.
in the amendment of line 19, after interest contested proofs, James Monroe asked one of the two things that is just add something like the burden of proof and substitute itself, so that's the description.
This act isn't applicable at all to people who have already been convicted yet.
Okay, now, so anybody with this into the amendment, just to be able to vote.
You won't sit on it right now. The problem is, I'd like to sit together and I'd like to talk to you before you put it on.
I'm going to sit here and ask that you can talk to the people.
Okay, and if we can get back and if we talk to you, we're able to bring it back. Just make the direct changes in the definition of murder.
I
would
suggest that there is a conflict with this bill already passed out with Council 2540. I think it's a conflict
with
the state of the man's body.
Yeah.
We can resolve that conflict by the reading section 2512, which are really reduced by the section 2540, which has passed the conflict. You also have a conflict. Which I believe is right after the amendment, which feels that it's actually amended by the Council 2040 to substitute the biennial review of
the rule. Just one other thing. Remember, the concerns about the bill potentially of the inability of them to transfer inmates from one institution to hospital or to something like that.
What are the burdens?
I think that was true. The bill can
take care
of
it. I believe they can take care of it by the solution of Section
17. Can you just give me a minute?
What was the proof you could in time to turn 5 points under the federal draft and under the state draft and two different state drafts? Would these amendments include the transfer that prison out of state of origin in North Carolina?
Yeah. All these prohibitions against transfer, and I just wonder whether inadvertently it's pretty problem.
The prohibitions that remain in the bill are specific prohibitions against parole, work release, forced camp, and work camp.
Put in a special thing.
Temporary leave.
Okay. We're happy to get out of state.
So let's put it to the next.
The amendments that the Senate put in on page 67, those are really the amendments that we had in the trial bill, are they not?
Yes, they are. The amendments of section 10, 11, and 12, and really the House Bill 2540.
Thank you.
Bill Quigley, I'm sorry, just that means Rule 4 about school procedures. The bill simply provides a procedure to determine the legal status of those children who are conceived by the method of artificial insemination, and provides a procedure to ensure that the donor is not carrying a genetic defect and has not been the donor to more than 20 successful inseminations in the state. So if you don't have a large pool of people with perhaps the same age who are halfway to 50 without realizing it. And I can go into what this is, but basically in the case of the latter, well, the genetic matters are up to the statistics with regard to making sure that the donor is kept out on the matter. And we can use to register each successful donor's name in a protected file with the state health department, so that he can then ask in the future whether such and such a person is still eligible as a donor. So if you don't have people doing what has been done in case of blood transfusions and becoming successful donors, if there is some money involved. I guess I should say why the children, under the present law, the children are technically illegitimate, at least in those cases where the husband is known to be infant or sterile, even though everyone has agreed it's all fine. It's simply establishing that the child is not eligible to be a legitimate child, has that same right.
Wasn't that the law of the article running the subject in that now?
I wouldn't be sad because I think the people from the law school are doing this in the right field.
Okay, any questions? Anyone else? Here we go. The response to everything is happy.
Are there four votes for that? Carry on. It's the most important. Pardon? Are there four votes for 770?
Not required of the imprisoned parent and determined not less than 5 years after
the change it from 3 to 5.
Yeah.
I don't understand this, but it means does. Then
I couldn't explain or why did it overcount for?
I'm in a depth of justice in mind, hopefully, and the reason for this bill is that we represent inmates out of the institution. What happens is that an adoption is filed against the inmate out there, either by the spouse that's out or by a relative if the child is in foster care. Now, as soon as the person is sentenced for more than 3 years, the consent is no longer required under the statute as it now appears. So what we've done is to increase the 3 years to 5 years and state that he has actually must serve the 5 years. The other area that this problem arises is if an inmate contacts me to visit his children, in foster care, I try to arrange visitation in the foster care or there are adoptive parents interested. I have been threatened that if I go ahead with and try to force the visitation that they will then proceed with an adoption and they can do it without my client's consent.
Does this have any effect on termination for that arrival?
No. There is a case that I wanted to bring to your attention called State v. Grady, which involved the termination of parental rights for a woman at OWCC quite some years ago. The court did not speak to this amendment and it has not been a subsequent case. This statute appears in the adoption statute, not in the termination of the parental right.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Just one.
So is it my understanding that this thing has been sentenced for more than 3 years
that even if he doesn't serve them.
Yeah, as long as he's in the institution, as soon as he is sentenced 3 years, the baby is sentenced 3 years, they don't need a consent.
And if he only spends 2 years, let's say he only spends a year.
Yeah, if he gets out, if he's out, then I do not think the statute applies.
Okay, here's my problem. You get sentenced today, if his wife would, or somebody would file for an adoption paper, and they got it through the last in the next 6 months.
Oh, he's done.
And even though he only serves a year,
right,
and he goes out on parole.
As soon as he is sentenced in excess of 3 years, his consent is no longer required in the federal statute. And that's, I must admit, our sample that we see is entirely biased because it's only the parents who are trying to keep the family together that even make the effort to contact us.
Something that's just concerning the other side of the time.
Yeah.
If there, and certainly circumstances are, even though maybe he hasn't been there 3 years yet, he might be in the guy out there for him to. Probably, he could have his surrender out of time. It would be another way to go. But there isn't anything we can do about that. I mean, you know, to find out if he put it in proper care and rubbish or something like that. So it would delay the, in a number of cases, and the same adoption that could have to occur after the certain time. My experience has been that if the parent is not interested, he doesn't object. Yeah, and I like I said, my sample is entirely biased because it's only those who consult me who are in the future.
I hate to see the situation in the child couldn't be adopted if it couldn't be
adopted.
Anybody interested in the office? Next one, Dr.
Is my understanding that the amendment would take the court out of determining whether the person is rehabilitatable or not. And that includes the initial determination.
The initial determination is important.
Yes. The judge sentence, right, it's the same thing. We just back to the fact that the person,
every individual sentence for murder, is going to have the burden of proving that he is rehabilitatable. That's right.